Welcome to Boiling Point, the podcast to motivate ever-evolving entrepreneurs and forward-thinking movement pioneers. Our hosts, filmmaker Greg Hemmings and executive coach Dave Vail, are turning up the heat in the world's business communities. Our interviews with entrepreneurs, thought leaders, and movement makers are raising the temperature of inspiration. Live from the hottest studio in this quadrant of the universe, here are Dave and Greg.
Well, Greg, we're back for yet another episode, and you were telling me just a moment ago how healthy you're eating in the morning. I got to say, I'm very impressed.
Are you impressed? Really?
Well, yeah, I did not picture that. I was thinking like Fruit Loops or something.
Are you kidding me? I haven't eaten that CRAP in years. No. Seriously, I've been blessed. I have to tell you, I have been blessed with this amazing wife who, before she went into medicine, she was in nutrition for a number of years at Acadia. That's what she was studying. Anyway, all that to say is ever since we've been together, I've been introduced to the most healthy, beautiful food. And now it's just habitual. We just have these amazing breakfasts.
I'm coming over.
Of eggs and spinach in the morning.
It's
awesome. And you know what it helps me
with? By.
I've got a very stressful job in life, Dave.
Yes.
But you know what? The healthy breakfast in the morning, do you know what that does?
No.
It helps me hit that day and reduce the stress.
Oh, the brilliant segue you're attempting to make here. We've got a very interesting guest, and I think it's so appropriate, you know. I think we're gonna be talking from the perspective of business owners, right, entrepreneurs, but also parents, because Ramit is on the line. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you so much for having me on your podcast. This is so exciting for me.
Yeah. Well, thanks for joining us. And you're doing some really interesting research, and very important in your company is Viewpoint Leadership. Is that correct?
Yes, it is.
Okay. And maybe you can give us, and we if you've heard other episodes, we often ask our guests to introduce themselves because they'll do a much better job.
They know themselves better than we do.
Even though we have this wonderful bio sitting in front of us. Tell us a little bit about Viewpoint and yourself and some of the work you've been doing.
Absolutely. So Viewpoint Leadership, I am the chief learning architect here. And so I design experiences that build resilience. And so we look at building resilient organizations, but the key there is to build resilient individuals within that organization. And Viewpoint Leadership essentially does a lot of training and development. We run workshops, we run training sessions, we do leadership development. It's a lot of fun, and I absolutely love what we do. The other arm of it is we do quite a bit of research in terms of topics that are impacting individuals in the workplace and look at how those things impact the resilience of an organization. And then on the side, we are talking about being parents as well, is I am coming out with a picture book titled Who Do I Want to Be or Who Do I Want to Become? And it's connected to a workshop that I do on Who Do I Want to Be When I Grow Up for grade 7, 8, and grade 10 students.
Oh, wow. I think it'll be important for us is what you're going to say.
Exactly.
When we grow up. I mean, I'm only 46. I mean, come on. What in terms of your research? Maybe we can start here. Like in this resiliency, I am fascinated by the topic. I find it incredible the human capacity for resiliency and how some people could access it more easily than others and what caused that. In terms of some of the research, like what are the things like what are the hot topics right now in terms of things that are maybe causing job related stress and then what may be inhibiting resiliency? Like is that a good place to start? Would that be a topic of conversation?
Absolutely. So we actually just released a study last week, and this study was focused on something called the tall poppy syndrome. And that was a term that was popularized in Australia. And what it relates to is this idea that when people succeed, that instead of congratulating them on their success and their achievements, we actually bring them down. And so we did this huge national study on the tall poppy syndrome to see if in Canada this was happening in the workplace. And so we had over 1,500 people respond to this survey, and 87.3% of them said that they had felt that their achievements were undermined by others at work. And that is actually quite significant. And so when we look at that, and we dug very deep into that actually impacted productivity. It impacted retention because the individuals, the high achievers that were being brought down, they actually looked for work elsewhere. And so that was impacting in organizations and their resilience because they were actually losing their best. And those are harder to replace. It also had a toll on the individuals that responded to the survey, and they said, you know, it impacted their self-esteem and their self-confidence. And self-confidence and self-trust, I would say, is at the core of resilience. Mm. And so when we look at something like bringing others down, we look at civility in the workplace. This study was quite telling in terms of what was happening across Canada, across industries and across sectors, and how that was impacting organizations and individuals.
So what is causing this maybe lack of civility or people wanting to, you know, kind of that whole idea of the crabs, you know, where you want to pull people back down to the bucket? Where is that stemming from?
And so that's what we asked our respondents. And the number one thing that came out of the data, 83.2% of respondents said that they believed that this was occurring because of jealousy or envy. 68.6% said that it was because of sexism or gender stereotypes. And about 60% said a lack of confidence on those that were actually doing the cutting. And so I will share with you, I read hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of stories. There were 268 pages of data, and the respondents were very willing to share their experiences. And it was actually quite disheartening to read the experiences that they had gone through in the workplace, and very interesting to hear why they thought it happened. But what was very telling is that of those respondents that this happened to, more than 4 in 10 witnessed a coworker being cut down and did nothing about it.
Interesting. I'm really glad that you studied both sides. As you were speaking to that, I was wondering, you know, I'm going to use the word victim in this case, but like somebody who's been brought down into the bucket, like the tall poppy that was cut down. I wonder if it goes further. Like, is it possible that one of their modes of defense could actually be by perpetuating the problem elsewhere? Is that, because I always think about that whole bully, the bullying theories that, you know, kids who are bullied sometimes and maybe even oftentimes are, you know, become bullies themselves in a lot of cases. Have you looked at that side of it as well? Like, or is there ways that you've seen that people actually have used this energy to be able to try to make the workplace better for others?
Excellent question. And we actually, that was one of the questions that we posed. And of our respondents, 1 in 10 admitted to participating in the cutting. And so I actually now use it as a verb. I call it, you were tall poppied, or I've just been tall poppied, where we are cut down for our success and achievement. But 1 in 10 did admit to participating in the cutting, which was surprising to me. Another surprising finding I think you would find interesting is we did focus in the workplace, but I did want to talk a little bit about outside of the workplace because we bring our whole selves into the workplace and into our jobs. And so one of the questions was whether or not you experienced it outside of the workplace. And almost half of respondents, so 43.9% of respondents that said they did experience it, they shared that they were cut from their friends and their social network. And so if it wasn't happening at work, or if it was happening at work, when they were meeting with their friends, it was happening there too. And so I think this is something that happens not just at the workplace, but also within our personal lives. And that impacts things like resilience. It impacts our self-esteem and our self-confidence. And what ends up happening is we don't end up sharing our achievements with others.
Interesting. And the unfortunate side effect of that is people aren't able to be inspired by their colleagues either. Like just this weekend, Ramit, I climbed a pretty significant mountain with three other couples, my wife and I. And doing something that like that alone, you might not even do it. Doing it with a second person helps. But when you've got a group of people that are sharing in the success, you know, it's inspiring. You know, so if I hear that Dave is doing something amazing and is winning, it inspires me to go further, you know. But how come is it that not everybody sees it that way? Where, and is it drilled down to fear? Is that what it is? Like when you mentioned envy and jealousy earlier, what is it really at the core that motivates people? Like, motivates people for me to see my friends and colleagues succeed, but for others, seeing other people succeed further than you, it's it brings them into a threatening position. What's the root of this?
That's exactly it. But first, let me say congratulations.
Thank you.
On accomplishing that. And to your point, I do think it comes from insecurity, right? And I do think that sometimes people believe that the pie is only so big, and if someone gets a piece of that pie, that's less for me. But the pie isn't a set size, right? It's not that if someone accomplishes something, that's taking something away from you. And I do think a bit of it does come from insecurity. But if we reframe that and say, you know, we can celebrate and congratulate others, that's not taking anything away from me. I think we need that conversation, and that narrative does need to change in order for us to create this environment of support and achievement versus what the respondent said, and that was that we're creating an environment of distrust.
That's scary. I hate hearing that, because and you know, it's, I mean, how much of this would be connected to the, you know, the tribe you have around you, I wonder, you know, because I really believe it's so important to consciously build people around you that are there to support you and build you up, and also, you know, call you out if you're offside and all those kind of things. But I'm just trying to imagine, like, I mean, so I've been able to share some recent, you know, kind of, I think, fairly significant accomplishments in terms of things that have happened. And I haven't heard anything negative back. I've heard nothing but positive things. And I guess I'd be kind of surprised and disappointed if I heard something negative, but I would
but
be
you're
more,
in a bubble.
But I would be more right? disappointed in the person than in, you know, like in me sharing it, you know? Like, and I just, you know, and I guess maybe another point I was thinking is, I find, and I saw a little bit in you, you know, I'd be interested, Ramit, in your perspective, but it seems to me that like a platform like Facebook has so many good qualities, but it also has capacity to really, I heard depression's connected to it because people are staring at everyone else's best self and feeling less of themselves. And I mean, is it like, to what degree is this way we're interacting with social media impacting, you know, people's, you know, being cut, or tall poppied, as you say?
That's an excellent point. And actually, I've curated a webinar on the dark side of social media. And we're finding this a lot with youth as well, where they are, to your point, comparing other people's best selves with their perceived worst self, right? Or comparing other people's vacations with the fact that they're not going on vacation. But what we forget is that people curate what it is that you see and what you have access to. Not everybody is posting things that they might have failed at, whereas I think it's actually very important to talk about stuff that we failed at, because others can learn from that and we can learn from that. But we are posting those edited pictures that have gone through maybe 20 different filters, and we take 100 of pictures to get that one perfect one, and that's what we present to the rest of the world. And it is causing quite it is having such an impact on our youth, and not a positive way all the time. Yes, we have more access. Yes, we're providing a platform and giving youth a voice to be heard in various different platforms. But at the end of the day, how is it impacting their mental health? How is it impacting how they perceive they should be, how they should act, what they should look like, what position title that they should have? And so this really needs to be studied further, is my take on it. But we are seeing studies coming out that show a direct link with poor mental health and social media.
Oh, I can only imagine. Now, now you're speaking to two fathers here. I'd love your advice about, you know, how do we support our children in being resilient, in leveraging, you know, all these wonderful channels of communication,
yeah.
You know, but not, you know, but to the degree we can help them not be dragged down by it or not be tall poppied.
Mm-hmm. And I think we have to role model it. Right. And so sometimes as parents, we're glued to our phones and we're role modeling that to our children, or we're on Facebook or on social media and they're seeing us on that and they're role modeling that. So I do think it comes from us in terms of what it is that we role model. But to your question is having a discussion about it, and a very open discussion about it. Right. Talking about, well, what's happening at school, or, you know, how have you experienced this, or what do you think about so-and-so's post, or if something something comes up in the news that's age appropriate, having that open discussion and then providing your input. But very critical to that is engaging with their responses in a positive way. So they might have their own perspectives based on who their friends are at school, what conversations they have outside of that family norm. But engaging positively with their responses is critical to continue the conversation. If our children are saying to us, oh, no, mom, no, dad, you're wrong because we think this is what it's related to, and we say, no, no, that's not right, that's not engaging positively. It's more about opening the discussion to understand their perspective and their reality. I recently came across an article actually last year where it said it is the scariest time to be a 13-year-old and the parent of a 13-year-old. Because, right? And to us, like, this is all difficult. Like, social media is new. I didn't have my first email address until I was in grade 9. And my son, who's 2 years old, he had an email address a week before he was born because I created it for him and I send pictures and who knows if he'll have access to it when he's able to read. But that's such a difference, right? And so we're trying to understand social media from the lens of a 13-year-old, but we can't be empathetic because we're not in their shoes. So as parents, I think opening that dialogue, making sure that conversation continues and we interact with it in a positive way, I think will create kind of a very good environment to help build their resilience. And also when something not so great happens, they trust us to come and share that with us and know that we won't judge them.
It's good. It's very good advice. And you know, because we don't understand that it's hard to understand that perspective, you know, especially with a young person whose, you know, brain isn't fully developed and, you know, how they're being impacted by, like, the one thing that comes to mind, you know, when I have some friends that have kids that are older than mine. My oldest is 12 and youngest is 18 months. And by the way, when you're talking about being on the phone, it's really telling when your you know, kind of 15, 16, 17-month-old child grabs the phone and
knows
starts
how to
talking
open it.
On it, like, and saying, you know, and feels like it's a source of power. And you go, oh, I'm probably on this too much around, you know, like, this is not good.
That's a good point.
Like, that was, like, I'm just shocked. I'm like, why does she think this is so powerful, this little device, that, you know? So clearly there's a message for me as a father. But what I was going to say, I read something once, or I think I've run across it a few times, but this idea that being ostracized or feeling like you're being ostracized has the same impact in, you know, kind of in terms of your how your brain processes it as actually being physically harmed.
And yes, pain.
Yeah.
Yes.
As pain, yeah. And I was shocked to learn that. And then I just realized the powerful impact. And you know, so now you're part of an online community with a bunch of friends and all of a sudden people stop not like or unliking you or whatever on Facebook or whatever the platform is. How painful that could be for a young person and how they could feel so isolated. And when we know what it really does in terms of how your brain processes it, it actually really worries me for kids.
Absolutely. And there's a balance too, right? Because our children grew up in a high achieving environment where they have graduation from kindergarten to grade one, right? And we're constantly saying, you know, good eating, right? Like we're constantly just, it's almost, when we look at parents, we're giving them A for effort, which is a very, very positive thing. And then when they get into the real world, when they're not getting that pat on the back because they drew a straight line, it's kind of shocking to them, right? So there is also this balance piece. I think that's really, really, really important. We do want to ensure that we have this culture of achievement and success, but we also want to make sure we're not overdoing it either, right? Because when they get into the workplace and they're not getting that pat on the back or that promotion every 5-6 months, that's a bit of a reality check.
You know, I'm sorry, Greg, I feel like I'm dominating this because I'm so fascinated by this, but I can share this story because it's out. But my son recently became part of a TV show on CBC called Canada's Smartest Person Junior. And he was with 11 other participants, 10 to 12 years old. And it's an elimination, you know, and these are all smart kids, right? And it's like the psychological stress was incredible to see.
How did he do, like, in the moment?
Well, he did remarkably well. But one of the things, you know, and Ramit's kind of touching on it that I thought was interesting is I was listening to some of the parents, and they're wonderful families and wonderful kids, and these kids really connected and stuff. And I heard a couple of parents talking about how worried they were about the kids because their kids had really never, like, you know, probably experienced not winning, I guess, essentially. And I thought, well, I don't know, our boy will be okay because he's gone out to many hockey teams. He hasn't made it, all that kind of stuff. It still was hard, but I didn't have that same fear. And I just realized how helpful and healthy it is to say to your, I believe anyways, and I'd like your opinion, but I mean, just, yeah, go out, you know, let's go to that chess competition, you know? And, you know, like if you come fourth place, that's great. As long as you tried your best, you know, but there is a winning and losing aspect to life. And I kind of want to expose my kids to it and myself and everyone to, because there's some things that just, that's just, you know, this is the way things work, you know, but do you have a growth or fixed mindset, right?
Yes, exactly. And if you look at children that are just learning to walk, they try to walk, they fall down, and then they try again,
right.
And then they try again, and then they try again, right? Even though they fell down, which could be seen as a failure, they're still trying, and that's really what we're rewarding or should be focused on. It's not the walking, it's how they're trying to walk and learn this new skill, which I think is so, so powerful.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think we touched on something too a second ago, is those other parents. And perhaps all of us as parents have to think about this, is implanting fear into our kids by being worried. Like, oh, how's my child going to feel if they lose? Well, they're hearing those messages as well, right? So perhaps as a baby who doesn't understand fear and keeps trying over and over and over again, can you imagine if they were in a growing environment where there was never an understanding of failing is bad, you know, or failing is something to be fearful of. I know that we inflict that. And I think about, my daughter is, she just turned 9. So, but she's been public speaking for the last 2 or 3 years in front of large audiences. And the only people that bring any fear into her is every adult that says, I could never do that. You're amazing. It's so good that you're doing that, but there's no way I would ever be able to do that. Well, you're inflicting your own fears into these kids, and then these kids eventually grow up realizing, oh, it must be scary. Adults are afraid of it. Yeah.
Yes, that's exactly it. And again, it goes back to the previous point that it's what we role model, right? And it's also being careful with the words that we choose and how we express ourselves and how we engage with their responses, because they are listening. They're watching and they're listening because they're trying to figure life out too. So I think that's so powerful that she's a great public speaker, and it's she needs to build on her self-confidence to say, you know, this is my strength, and it might not be the strength of others, and that's okay.
So people that are, myself, that want to learn more about your research and about what you do with Viewpoint Leadership, how do we learn more?
Well, we do have our website, viewpointleadership.ca, and there's lots of information there. I, again, as I mentioned, I have a picture book coming out called Who Do I Want to Become? And that really came out of my work abroad. I did a lot of initiatives in terms of building schools in different parts of the world, building a teacher's college, supporting scholarships in Peru and in Ecuador. And when I stayed in Kenya for a number of weeks, I had the opportunity to connect with a few orphans. I visited two different orphanages and was able to spend some time with them. And I asked them the question, what do you want to be when you grow up? And when they were responding to this question, what they were actually telling me was not what they wanted to be, but who they wanted to be.
Mm.
And so that, and this happened, this was about 2 years after the market crash. And it really resonated with me because position titles come and go, right? That what comes and goes, but that who you are is really what matters the most. And so with the work that I do, a lot of it is all about impact. A lot of it is about changing narratives, whether we're changing the narrative in the workplace from a culture of distrust to a culture of support and achievement, whether we're changing the narrative at home and opening discussions and not asking our children what they want to be, but instead asking them who they want to be, or just changing that narrative with friends. Right? I think we have the ability to do so. And a lot of my work speaks to that, but really it's about that internal reflection about what impact do I want to have? Who do I want to become, whether you're a child or an adult, and what legacy do I want to leave?
How do people get the book? Because I mean, this would be awesome for a whole bunch of people I can think of.
Thank you. So it is available for pre-order. The book launches on October 15th, but it's not just a book, and I want to stress this out. We actually have free lesson plans from kindergarten to grade 6. We have a parent guide that speaks about what you can share in the home that can support this idea of who do I want to become, because sometimes those conversations are difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got worksheets for children and adults. to come to that kind of realization of what impact and what legacy do I want to have? What opportunities and activities are out there that I can engage in?
You know what? And it's so, I'm so glad you have for adults as well. Like, I know in the work I do as a executive coach, there's a lot of times people are in transition and they never really considered, you know, and they might be in their 50s that, you know, who do I want to be versus what do I want to do? So that's so nice to hear. Well, you know what? I'm very clear in this conversation as to why you have been twice named one of Canada's top 100 most powerful women.
Thank you.
That is what a cool title. I mean, we just brought that up now, but I read that earlier. I was like, wow, very, very cool. You clearly, you're so passionate. I mean, how did you get to this work? You know, just like what is it that's motivated you? Because I'm hearing all this passion.
Honestly, I love being an entrepreneur, but it's more about, I think, opening opportunities for others. I mean, I was very lucky to be born and raised in Canada where I had access to education. And that for me is so critical to be able to provide access and quality education to others. And honestly, I've been an entrepreneur for 14 and a half years, and one opportunity led to another opportunity, which led to another opportunity. But at the core of the two businesses that I run is we always try to make an impact. And that for me is more important than the profit side. Of course, there's bills to pay and that gets done. But if we can make an impact, that's what actually keeps me going. And now having a two-year-old, I mean, he changed my life. And so that impact piece is so important, and changing that narrative is so important for me too.
Ramita, as a closer, Dave and I have been really focusing on, how do we get our message heard in a very noisy marketplace, and that we really want to serve our Bowling Point podcast listeners with concepts and ideas around that. So, with your research backing up whatever your suggestions are, how do we get heard in a noisy marketplace in ways that aren't going to be damaging? Because this sounds like we've got a very vulnerable marketplace with human beings at the center. We have to be careful how we position ourselves, but we also need to be heard. So maybe as a closing comment, what are some ideas around that?
I would simply say to be authentic. And I know that term authentic gets thrown around quite a bit, but what that really speaks to is to be who you are, right? If you had that achievement, own it, right? That was your achievement. Own it, and not to let that noise impact you. And yes, it is a very noisy marketplace. There's lots of content out there. There's lots of ideas. There's all the stuff that's out there. But I think what truly stands out are those who are authentic and transparent and are genuine with what their messaging is. I truly believe that's what resonates with people at the end of the day.
Yeah, I love that. And you know what? And it's so much easier to be yourself, because then, you know, it's easy to remember what you're supposed to be.
Yes, it's way less
exactly.
work.
like just as an example, we Greg and I a month ago or so, by the time this will be aired, we were the MCs of this event, and I think, you know, because we're co-chairs of the United Way campaign, and I think there's this expectation of how you're supposed to MC, and we just thought, well, we'll try our best to stay with the script, but we got to be ourselves. You know what I mean? And we had a number of people say, thank you for doing that.
Oh,
we were
a couple of goofballs up there, but no, we weren't trying to be goofs. It's just that
we are
us. And maybe some old stiffer people out there that might have rolled their eyes, but so many people were like, hey, thanks for making this fun. I was like, well, we didn't intend to do that. We just wanted to present ourselves as who we are.
So,
you know?
So Ramit's encouraging us to continue.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah, that's good.
And through my experience, I've learned there's always one. There's always one person that's going to roll their eyes. There's always going to be one. And if there's one out of a group of 1,000, let there be one. It's all good.
Okay,
or even if there's 100 of a group of 1,000, that's okay.
Exactly. You know what? That's going to be our takeaway. Yeah. Let there be one.
Yeah.
So be it. Let there be one.
God bless them.
Yes.
What a joy to talk to you. Your work is so important.
Thank you.
Can you remind people again, just if they're listening, how to reach you and how to learn more about you?
Absolutely. Please come visit my website at viewpointleadership.ca, or you can find me on Twitter at Ramit Billen or on LinkedIn. Would love to connect.
Incredible,
Dr. Ramit Billen. Thank you so much. I hope you're named for a third year of one of the most most powerful women. I mean, it's got to happen. Now you've got to be on that annual list. No pressure.
Thank you so much. It's been a privilege to speak with the both of you.
Thank you so much for being. Have a great rest of your day.
You too. Take care.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
My God, what a breath of fresh air. That woman, she's like incredible. Like, I just love the work, and she's so clear and articulate, and she's quite... I just love that. I love the resiliency space, Greg. Like, I'm so fascinated by it.
Well, especially what's going on in the world right now. When we see what's...
Thanks for checking out this episode of Boiling Point. Remember to rate and subscribe to us on iTunes and follow us on Twitter at Boiling Point Pod. To see more from Dave Vail, check out leadershipunleashed.ca or visioncoachinginc.com. And on Twitter at Dave_Vail. And to catch up with Greg, visit hemmingshouse.com and at Greg Hemmings on Twitter. Thanks for listening, and remember, keep that pot boiling.
I'm Connie Thiessen, the host of Broadcast Dialogue, the podcast. We focus on Canada and the challenges facing Canadian radio and TV, as well as highlighting those moving the industry forward from podcasting and streaming to new broadcast tech. Check us out at broadcastdialogue.com or your favorite podcast app.